Hello and welcome to another edition of Sky Blue Stories, a very special one today, although I feel like we're saying that every week at the moment. You've got Jonathan Finger and today joining us, Sean Maloney.
Hey Jono, good to be back.
James Pearce-Enton.
Hola.
And a really special guest, and we're very grateful for his time today. A very busy man. Obviously, this is eating into his own personal time, and that's Sydney FC CEO Danny Townsend. Danny, welcome.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Woo. Mate, absolute pleasure. Do we clap?
You should clap yourselves. Yeah. You should clap yourselves on the stellar job you're doing promoting the club through this podcast.
We had Aubrey and Sophia on last week, and we attempted a clap, and I don't think we were very good at it, so...
Yeah, we'll just leave Danny's obviously not listened to that one.
Yeah, exactly.
I listened to them all.
Danny, I want to kick things off. I've done my research, and it was very interesting to read. Parramatta Power, Sydney United. Unfortunately, your career came to a very premature end, knee injuries. Do you think having a football background growing up as a footballer has helped you as CEO of Sydney FC?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, when you understand the game and you have a passion for the game, you know, it's easy to do a job when you're passionate about it. And I think when your subject matter is football and you've played the game and equally probably seen some of the things that I see today that I wish I had when I was playing in terms of professionalism, I think, you know, it's definitely a help.
Okay, it's not something, obviously being Sydney FC CEO, is not something that you immediately went into after retiring early. Again, you've been a bit of a marketer, a bit of a financier in the past, and one of those led you to what became an extremely successful business in Repucom, which I believe you sort of, I guess, hung the boots up from to take the Sydney job. Is that right?
Yeah, we built that agency up over about 14 years and took my family all over the place. We lived in Singapore for 5 years on two different sort of stints, and UK for 5 years and 4 years in New York at the end, and definitely saw a lot of the world and saw a lot of different sporting organisations and was able to study how they sort of handled things, and we fortunately sold that agency in 2016, which sort of freed me up to sort of take my next
step.
For those
that don't know the background of Repucom, I was reading that you're actually something I didn't know about you, Danny, was that you're a former AJC employee. I'm actually ex STC.
Oh, really?
Probably
so
around
so
the same
so was
time.
I.
And Sean, actually.
not as glamorous as you. The customer service parking
car park attendant.
Perfect.
I might have a lawn. Yeah. Thank you, Jono.
But so you were at the AJC.
Yep.
Deal with San Miguel came along, and then you decided, hey, I'm going to take this in another direction. So how did Repucom all come about?
Yeah, look, it's an interesting story. So San Miguel, I think at the time, were the biggest sponsor of sport in Australia with that deal, and they were all based in the Philippines, in Manila, and they didn't really have anyone on the ground. And I needed an agency to support they needed an agency, and they came to me and said, look, you're here in Australia, can you recommend an agency? And you always want to recommend an agency that you know aren't gonna take you down. Yeah. So I had a mate that I knew that had a good agency, and
that was Paul White.
That was Paul Smith. Yeah,
Paul Smith. Sorry.
Yeah,
Paul Smith.
And I spoke to Paul and said, hey, I've got a big client opportunity for you, but the deal is you don't go after me with them. And he obviously took them on and managed them for a couple of years. And I had 2 years the AJC. And Paul came to me and said, hey, look, why don't we set up an agency and have a crack, and that's what we did.
Brilliant. Wonderful. And like you said, took you all over the world.
Yeah, it did. It was not, you know, these things sometimes just happen. You don't plan that. We sort of just took it by sort of chance, and when both of us were pretty entrepreneurial, so ultimately when you get an opportunity, we were always saying yes, and I think when the Asian Football Confederation came to us and asked us to do some work on their commercial program up in Asia, it sort of meant that I had to move to Singapore. I had a 3-month-old child at the time.
Yes. Wow.
And a wife with a fashion boutique. So it was challenging, but it was a fantastic opportunity, and it led from there.
You mentioned how you learnt and mingled amongst different sport organisations. Was there an organisation that really stood out for you guys? I thought, wow, if we could replicate that, or other clubs, organisations within Australia could replicate that?
Well, I think it's less about the club and more about the model. You know, one of the things that we observe, particularly in the US, is where you've got multiple sporting franchises owned by the same people in the same town sharing resource. So whether that be commercial resource, whether it be medical resource, whether it be stadia, you know, you look at a lot of those major cities in America, and the one owner owns the hockey team, the baseball team, and the MLS team. which you think about, you know, Sydney is a city. There's a truckload of professional sports teams that are all independently either owned or owned by members that all have a marketing manager and all have a membership manager and all have a, you know, ticketing manager. So, you know, being able to aggregate those roles sometimes ensures that you're able to make some money, and that's one of the challenges in sport in Australia.
Yeah. Yeah, trying to make money. Yeah,
yeah, pretty good. Well, that'd be nice.
Yeah,
it'd be nice.
It's
and we've got some questions about the club making a bit of money recently with transfer business recently, but we'll get to all that one a bit later. So, like you said, Repucom finished up, your deal with them finished up, and all of a sudden, the Sydney FC job becomes available. I want to say how. This is, I guess, what I'm getting to is, what's your Sky Blue story, Danny? Did you apply yourself? Did someone tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, we'd love you to interview for this? How did that all come about?
Yeah, probably the latter. I was, you know, obviously being a shareholder in Repucom, I was never really on the radar to come back and work in jobs when they became available, because the organisations that typically headhunted those roles knew that I was sort of vested and couldn't leave until we moved on from Repucom. So I suppose the first trigger was when Repucom was sold, I became sort of less tied to that, and for the right opportunity I was willing to come back. And it was also clear that my wife and family wanted to return back to Australia, which naturally I did too, in the sense that I'd been away 14 years and my kids had never lived in Australia, I wanted them to have a similar upbringing to me on the northern beaches of Sydney. So just speaking to various people, I was starting to get a few phone calls, and I was still contracted to the Nielsen company who bought our business. Yep. And I had a deal with them to return back to Sydney and run the global business from Sydney, which was great. How practical that would be in the long run was probably debatable, but at the time I was like, yeah, okay, I'll do it. Then I got tapped up and someone said, look, this is job's up. Are you interested? And to be honest, I didn't know a lot about it in the sense that, you know, when you're abroad, you don't get a lot of day-to-day interaction with the A-League and obviously following it from afar, but really understanding the intricacies of the club and the league itself were things that I needed to do a bit of research into. You know, I always look at football clubs or sporting organisations, and they really are a product of the people that are inside them and the people that are running them, and that is, who is the owner, who is the chairman, and who are the board members? Because if you don't have stability in that sort of...
Yeah, it takes a village. It
does, and it only takes one of them to be a lunatic to stuff it all up, right? So,
any names?
No, the reason why I'm here is because they're not lunatics.
That's right. So, just out of interest, I'm a HR manager by trade. Who was the interview with? Was it with Scott Barlow? Was David involved? Was it just board members?
It was the board. It was the entire board.
Yeah, brilliant.
I went through a couple of, but I was living in New York at the time, so
I
flew back. I flew in for one interview and then went back to New York and then flew back for another one, and then was lucky enough to be given the job, and then moved back, I think, about the August of 2017.
Brilliant.
All right, so we've heard your journey getting into it, your interview process. We would like to think as fans that it's, you know, one of the most coveted high-pressure jobs in football in the country. Personally, how did you feel? You've got the family implications. You've got I'm getting into a club side. What were the things going through your head at kind of getting that call?
Oh, look, I think, you know, you always look at the bright side and look at the opportunity. And for me, I looked at what Sydney FC was all about as an organisation and what headroom there was. You know, I was coming into it on the back of a championship winning team. I think the record breakers, as they were known. Yep. So, you know, on the field there was already a lot of good things happening, and off the field the club had gone through a fair bit of rebuilding under Tony Pinata, and I think was back in a reasonably stable position. But, so on one hand you go, well, why would I take that job? There's only one
way
to go. There's only one way to go. or there's, you know, what is the opportunity for the game? What is the opportunity for the club in the context of the game? And, you know, I felt just with the strengths in participation and what opportunity there's always been in football, the best club to take advantage of that is Sydney FC. The best brand in football is Sydney FC because of all the things that are great about Sydney. And you know, to be able to represent a club that has relevance regionally in Asia as well was something that was really enticing and probably spoke a bit to my work history, having spent a lot of time in Asia. So, yeah, a lot of those things just all came together. I thought, you know what, I'm never one to sort of say, look, it's going to be too hard, because what's gone before me has put the club in a good spot. I still think there was a huge amount of work to do, and there still is.
Yeah. So you mentioned taking over from Tony Pignata got us in a good place. And, you know, what do you think put you over the line with that kind of almost baggage and legacy there?
Oh, look, like I said, I think there was just still a huge amount to do. And, you know, I looked at our training environment. You know, it's probably one of the worst in the country in terms of A-League facilities. We've going through a situation with our stadium that was clearly unsustainable for the long term. So we had these big projects that were still to be done.
Yep.
You know, I think the getting the football performance on track was important. Getting the financial stability on track was important. But transformational projects like a stadium and a training ground and a female academy and all these things that we still need to do and are doing as a club, you know, are really significant.
So it'd be correct in saying then that the appeal for you partly as well was that it wasn't a BAU type role where you just come in being a CEO, you get to transform, you get to change, you get to build.
Yeah, I think if it was a BAU job, I wouldn't have been interested, to be honest. Mm. It was, as much as I love the football part of it and all that, you know, at the end of the day, I'm not out there telling Stevie what to do. You know, we've got great people in our club in the football department. We've got Han Berger, who provides great support to the football department. So as much as I'm involved, you know, that'd be fun and great, and I'd be annoying after about 6 weeks, I reckon. So I think they're lucky they've got other things to do.
I think there's enough to keep you busy for a few years yet to come, Danny, which is good news for us and you, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm enjoying it. I think, you know, it's just fun being a part of an environment where you're winning and equally where you've just got good people to share that with. You know, I think in any good club and you look around and there's people there that just love being a part of it and love sharing that success, I think that really goes a long way to job satisfaction.
You're coming up to 3 years in the job this year. As James said, obviously record breakers 16-17 on the field. We then had a brilliant year again, 17-18, your first full season, and obviously won the championship last year. So on-field success, tick. What is it that the club looks for when talking to you? And you probably can't give a lot of these away, but, you know, do you have KPIs and what can you share any light on those?
Yeah, look, like in anyone in any role, you set your own KPIs really, because not to say that the board don't give me targets and things like that, but my relationship with the board is such that I think there's a degree of trust there that I'm going to do what's right for the club, and I think my number one priority really is financial sustainability.
Yep.
You know, and you know, the club, and we've been very fortunate that David Trakovenko has invested a lot of money to get the club where it is today, but that's unsustainable. You can't ask individuals to continue to fund our folly.
End up the NSL.
And I think I don't like running a loss-making enterprise. Like, that's not what this is about.
How have we gone the last 2 years? We broke even one of the years?
No, we've never broken even.
No.
But look, definitely the losses are nowhere near as significant as they were. And you know, the goal is to get to break even and start turning a profit and reinvesting that money in the club. Mm. And I think that's the MO of everyone involved in the club. I know that's the case with the owner and obviously with Scott Barlow as the chairman.
Huge challenge of yours, obviously, in the club is, you know, again, in football, you need to invest money to make money sometimes. And you mentioned, I believe, on the Fox Football Pod that the academy, we've invested something like $1.5 million into that
per season. Wow. It's been going for five. So, you know, I think they're really important investments, though. That's sort of to your point around transfers and what we're doing with building, assets for the club who are either going to play for our club or go on and play at other clubs and deliver a financial return. Those type of investments are really important. They're going to continue. And I think there's some really exciting talent starting to come through.
Well, you see those investments return through winning on Sunday. When did we last play?
Friday, winning on Saturday.
Were on you Friday, there? I was. We started off at the Leagues Club.
Were you still there on Saturday?
celebrating. And those boys and becoming, you know, senior squad members. So there's your investment being returned.
Yeah, there's different ways to measure success of the academy. In fact, we've just gone through a process with the board on how do we measure success. Is it how many transfers? Is it how many kids we've got in the youth national teams? You know, is it how many of those academy players that sort of transition into the A-League squad? The reality is right now with the structure of the league and the youth system is that there's not enough spots for those kids. There's so many good kids coming through. There's only 23 spots on an A-League roster. Yeah. So you've signed quite
a lot of them already.
Yeah, we've already got 20 re-signed for next year. So, you know, that makes it very difficult for a young guy who's going, hey, I'm working really hard here in the academy and I'm knocking on the door. We've just won the National Youth League And unfortunately, there's not many of them are going to be able to transition.
Marco Tilio.
Yeah, look, Marco's a great example. You know, he's
such a fanboy.
Marco's been, you know, one of the leading lights of our youth system for years now, and you know he's knocking on the door. He's really is, and he's training every day with the A-League guys. And what better way to learn the craft working alongside Miloš Ninković and Bamjohan and Caceres every
day?
Listening to Simon Hill and his talk about strategic plans, talking about listened to him this morning in terms of you'd like to double attendance in the next 20 odd years, but just thinking about strategic plan, like what's your vision for Sydney FC? Do you lay down a platform for 5 years? Is it 10 years or is 10 years too long? Like how far ahead do you look ahead for Sydney FC and what do you envisage over the next handful of years?
Yeah, there's probably a couple of macro things that overlay that, and probably the largest one is our TV deal that's got 3.5 years left. So, you know, there's some serious changes to our club's, I suppose, funding dynamic. Yeah. You know, new stadium will bring more revenues. Our centre of excellence will help us in terms of having an asset that we can to also monetise. Yeah. But for me, it's about the community. You know, if you think about the strength of our code is just the kids playing the game. The numbers that we've got are phenomenal when every other code would just give their left leg for those numbers. And it's long been a frustration of people in the game that we haven't been able to capitalise on that. So for me, I look at that and say, well, if I'm going to fill a stadium in 3 years or 5 years or however long it is, I need to engage the youth.
We've got the highest youth attendance, registrations of any sport in the country. And we've had that for a while. And for myself and a number of us who have played football over the years, you see that every weekend on a Saturday, Sunday. But how do you get those
kids? Do you get them engaged? You've got to get them young, you know, between the ages of 6 and 10 and get them to pick their team. You know, you've got to convince a kid that this club is who they're going to support for the rest of their lives. We don't have generational support. It's not like we're Arsenal and we've had 8 generations of my family.
It takes time to build. We haven't even seen through a generation yet.
Correct. And it's generational, exactly what Sean just said. What are we, 16th year of the A-League? 15th only. Yeah. So like Sean just said, we haven't seen a whole generation as yet. So it's going to take time.
You know, we all grew up when Sydney FC didn't exist.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas there's kids growing up now who don't know life without Sydney FC. So if we're able to ingratiate ourselves in their lives, then they're going to continue to grow with the club. And as they get older and start to have children and their children get dragged along to games and they become fans.
How much do you engage with the association, St. George, Canterbury? Yeah. So what's your work with them?
Yeah, significant. And that was one of the first things I did when I sort of took this job is I said, hang on, why aren't we engaged with these 7 associations? I need to get out there and meet these CEOs and presidents and say, how can we work together to get your players engaged with our club? And what can we do in return to ensure that we're going to contribute to their football education or their well-being? And we've done joint venture businesses with 7 of those associations. We're actually in business together. And we've put 7 development officers into their offices to go out there and drive the engagement with the youth.
Is there any kind of – sorry to jump into another quiz. Is there any kind of sharing with another club also based in Sydney, also that plays in the A-League when it comes to
MacArthur? Yeah.
No.
Oh, sorry.
No, like there's
is there another team in Sydney?
Not yet.
No. Can we keep what I'm saying? Danny, like, do you have to share those associations with MacArthur Western Sydney?
No, what we've sort of done is drawn a line through the middle of Sydney and said, well, these are ours, they're yours. But there's some that do cross over, and lucky them. You know, that association gets 2 clubs fawning over them and trying to promote their club. Yeah, cool. And so I think at the end of the day, we've got a collective responsibility at the elite level to get down and grow the game and ensure that those kids that are playing the game want to come and watch us play or want to come and watch the Wanderers play or want to come and watch MacArthur when they come in, because that's good for the league.
Yeah.
And we all want to see full stadiums, not just at our stadium. We want to see it. We want to see all the stadiums full.
Yeah.
I just want to go back to something you said around revenue in regards to TV rights, stadium helping to grow that. Do you anticipate an attendance increase? I know COGRA hasn't been awesome. The atmosphere couple of weeks ago was amazing.
But do you
anticipate attendances going back up? And then there was a lot of chat a couple of years ago, last year around Fox Sports going, we're spending a lot of money on TV rights. Mm. That deal's obviously got, what, 2-3 years left to run?
Yeah,
do we see that as a sustainable thing in 3 years, or is that too far out to predict? Is it something we're not relying on? I know that's kind of wispy.
I get where you're coming from. Look, I think that is broad and wispy for sure. When you think about, you know, the challenges ahead, like, that's just one of them, right? You know, we're fortunate that 15% of our revenues are tied up to media money. So that's not ridiculous. Like, yeah, don't get me wrong, we appreciate it. It makes a huge difference, and it'd be difficult to operate without it. So we do owe a significant debt of gratitude to Fox for putting us where we are today. But I think that their business is changing. The way people are consuming content is changing. The one thing's for certain in 3.5 years is there's going to be people wanting to watch our games. Where they watch them and how they watch them will change depending on how this landscape plays out. So what's most important for us as a code is to work on a couple of different scenarios. And as the next 2.5 years sort of roll out, we don't want to be getting to the 3.5 year mark and going, right, what are we going to do?
What are you now?
We've got to have a strategy. And I think, you know, with the new leagues co and the owners group, we're looking at different options at the moment on how we can start looking at alternative ways to engage the football consumer and get them really going to the one place to get all the information they need for football.
Follow up with that. We've seen the Premier League grow here in terms of support and whatnot since the rights kind of moved elsewhere. Have we seen any kind of halo effect with that happening into the A-League, or not measured?
No, not really. I think it's more the platforms that we're on that are changing, and we're looking at ways in which we can measure. Everyone talks about metrics, and the one metric everyone talked about was how many people watch 90 minutes of football on Fox. That's an important metric, but they're also, as you'd appreciate, podcasts, social media. Yeah. There's so many other ways in which people consume our game. Just because they might not watch 90 minutes on Fox doesn't mean they're not watching on KO or watching on the Telstra My Football app, or, you know, just taking a 6-minute mini match or something like that.
They're brilliant.
Yeah,
love them.
They're interested in the game, and that's what we've got to measure. If that interest starts to wane, that's when you've got bigger problems.
All right.
But we're not seeing that. The numbers that we see across the game are actually all growing. The only one that isn't, unfortunately, at the moment is the Fox audience, and we've got to help them and work with them to try and grow that audience and also transition fans who aren't on Fox to getting KO and supporting the game.
What do you think it is about at Sydney FC that other clubs would give their left, you know what, be able to emulate? Like, is it
leg?
Yeah, left yes, leg. Exactly. Yeah, for that. What do you think it is about us that other clubs would go, God, I wish we had that here at Adelaide United?
I don't think it's one
here
thing.
At City.
There's a few things. I think success.
Yep.
You know, success is really important. You know, the reason why we're all engaged in the game is to win silverware and celebrate those successes, as I talked about before. So we've had a lot of it, and we've had, you know, consistent a lot of it, which is great, and that's important. But I think the real one is stability. You know, we probably went through a stage as a club where we didn't have stability of ownership, stability of board,
coaches,
players. And I think what we've got now and what we've had the last 3-odd years is real stability. You know, we've got a board who have remained fairly stable, very supportive. You've got an owner and a chairman that have been there now a long time. They've both been there since the beginning.
CEO.
Coach has been there since the beginning.
Yeah, coach has been there since the beginning. You've got a lot of players that have been around since the
beginning.
Yeah, you've
got a core group inside the squad that have been there consistently over the last handful of years.
And that's underestimated. I think, you know, people talk about foreigners and all these sorts of things, and our view is that your Aussies are the ones that provide that stability in your squad, because you've got to have at least 18 of them, right? You know, and that's a lot of your 23 squad. So if you haven't got a good bunch of Australian guys, you're not going to build continuity in performance, you're not going to build heroes amongst our fan base, and probably the most important is culture. You know, you get these guys that we've had for a long time who, you know, Broski was key to that. He's moved on. You got Wilco's taken over. Same character, same style of leader.
Nothing changes. It just continues where he left off,
And look, you got guys like Zulo and Grant. They're just winners. You know, you got to put winners in your club, whether that's on the field or off the field. If you surround yourself with winners, you're invariably going to win.
Yeah.
So it's, recruitment is critical.
And the vibe amongst the players, we've talked about it before. Yeah. Like on Instagram, social media, we do follow quite a lot of them.
Yeah.
They look like they're having a really good time. Like they genuinely enjoy each other's company. They're genuinely friends outside, you know, off the pitch as well.
Yeah.
And there's good banter.
And you've just seen what's gone on with Alex, right? Having it to go back to Germany and the way the guys
Brilliant.
And the Cove did a fantastic tribute on the weekend. But the guys also, Alfie ran over to grab his shirt from the bench and unfortunately Alex Gardino was off warming the players up so he didn't have his shirt ready. But that wasn't forced. That was the players wanting to, you know, sympathise with their colleague.
I think James commented, we're at the game, and I think James commented, he just said, I love this club.
Yeah.
Like, and it's that stuff that, you know, if you've got that in the playing group and you've got that, you know, with people like Jess who have worked there for, you know, 10 years now, it flows through to the support.
You just want to be a part of it. You see them having fun, you see them interacting and you just think, shit, it'd be good to hang out with them for a couple hours and just have a bit of fun, right?
Yeah. That's why we got Danny here.
Yeah, to be fair, you're right. They're just, you know, you get good people. At the centre of all good organisations are good people and that's on the field, that's off the field. And I think having continuity of those good people makes a big difference, and I think that's probably what most clubs would be envious of.
You touched on something that I want to play with for a sec, and that was having winners in the club. Now, winners are expensive. And we've got a salary cap.
Sometimes.
How do you keep affording winners? How do you just when you think, all right, you know, we might be at our peak, Milos resigns, Alex comes, Costa comes, we keep Alfie. Like,
because winners want to keep winning. They want to play together.
Yeah.
And they'll take less money to win
than
they will to go elsewhere and risk not winning.
Brilliant work with Bratz, by the way.
Yeah, and he's another example. Like, you know, I remember when we went through the process of bringing Bratz in, and, you know, Bratz is a fiery character on the field. When he's not on your team, he's one of those players that you sort of gets under your skin a bit. I like those sort of players when they're out.
He's our bastard.
Exactly.
He's our bastard.
But we weren't sure. You know, none of us in the recruitment setup had played with him or worked with him before. Okay. And we pulled in Wilco and Zulo and I think there was someone else, Redders, who'd played with him before.
Brisbane, yeah.
And said, hey, what's this guy like? We like what he does on the field, but what's he like as a character? How's he going to fit into the change room? Because he looks a bit of an idol. And they went, what? He's brilliant.
He's
a great guy. All of them, without.
He's Alfie with long hair, isn't he?
Like, yeah. Similar.
My only criticism sometimes from the stands, I can't tell the difference between him and Grant.
Yeah.
It's so Caceres and Milos.
Yeah, there are a lot of lookalikes out there. That's probably part of that's consistency.
The DNA.
No, but Bratz has been amazing, and he's come in and worked really hard. He has exactly the same passion for winning as Joshy did, who he replaced.
Yeah,
and that's important.
100% key. And Josh, obviously, Josh had that deal with Poe. Last year, come along, a bit of, you know, unsettling time for him. And I think Luke signed quite late, I think, in the end, because he was going to go to Turkey.
He was,
And to get a player of that quality over the line and to re-sign him, like we were talking about this on the pod, we were almost resigned to the fact that due to family and we don't know what was going on, obviously, but something to do with family, we thought, you know what? He's probably going to go to Brisbane, and that's okay. Yeah. Like, it's family first.
Yeah.
So the fact that he stuck around, I know we're all super pumped about that.
Yeah, but if you go back to your point around how do we keep them all, and my point around consistency is also important, right, because the rules and the regulations around the cap encourage you to sign players long-term.
Which we have discussed, yeah.
And we have significant amount of exemption based on loyalty, which is a credit to the club that they've been able to find it their place to be for that amount of time that they start qualifying for loyalty exemptions. And then you've got homegrown, so bringing kids through your academy, you're incentivized to do that. So we're fortunate that we've been able to build a consistency of playing group that affords us a lot more in the salary cap.
Which is probably, without blowing smoke, a testament to how the club's run, to have potentially, and obviously we're not asking or even hinting at wanting specifics, but potentially having a slightly higher wage bill because it's not counted in the cap.
Yeah.
But still being obviously a loss, but financially sound, right?
So yeah, look, the marquees that the club have had in the past have been far more expensive than the ones we have today. But our recruitment philosophy was, let's get proven A-League talent. Because it's a hard place to come and play. You know, we've seen a litany of really talented foreigners come to Australia and fail. And it's not because they're not good footballers. It's because it's hard. You know, the speed of the games, it's
physicality,
quick, it's physical.
Conditions.
The pitches are hard. It's hot. So, you know, I think all those things contribute. I'm talking to Milos about it. Like he said, his first year in Australia was so hard. Yeah. He got used to it and he obviously performed at an unbelievable level.
Yeah. He's done all right.
Yeah, he's battled through it.
Do you think some of those foreigners, both within Sydney FC and other clubs, kind of, you know, they go, well, I've played in the Serie A and I'm Eredivisie and it should be easier. Do you think some of them have been a bit guilty underestimating?
Yeah. Oh, look, Sim De Jong was a classic. Like he said to us a couple of weeks in going, wow, this is hard. Like this is real hard.
Wow.
And, you know, Milos was sort of that conversation, Milos and Sim, and he's going, yeah, it's hard. It is hard. Mm. So I do think they underestimate a few things. With physicality is definitely one of those. Speed of the game, the time on the ball. Mm. What we lack in skill, we make up for in tenacity. And I think that's a trait of Australian footballers.
Yeah,
but, you know, I think in the main, it is a difficult place to transition to. And sometimes probably players don't give it enough time. You know, they probably look for greener pastures because it's too hard, or they don't see that they're going to, you know, turn the corner and start performing better than they thought they would.
Yeah. It's amazing to hear that comment from Sim as well, because you do hear some foreign players say that, and you wonder, okay, how much of it is lip service to the fan?
And
it's great to get that type of insight from you as well, because you know it's genuine. You're saying to the boss, you know, actually, it's a little bit harder than I thought. Well, you're not going to say that to the boss if it's not.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to admit to your boss that this is harder than I expected.
Yeah. Yeah, look, but
the implications that come.
But that's sort of, again, the honesty and trust we have as a group, as a club, is that, you know, if someone's having a rough trot, then you get in behind them and you help them, and you can only do that if you talk about it. And I think, you know, Steve and Robbie Stanton, all the guys out there at Macquarie Training Base, you know, just walk into that place and it feels good. It's just the environment they've built is one that, you know, again, I think, although the facilities aren't what you would call world class, I think what's inside those walls is
long may it continue. Changing tack a bit, Danny, and you would know coming in to talk to a fan podcast that these questions will come up. So I'll ask a couple at the same time. A couple at the same time. So, and this has come up a lot with the fans as well.
Yeah.
So where exactly are we at with the rebuild? Have we gone as far as having conversations with the Georges River Council or Jubilee Stadium about an extension potentially? And Cronulla Sharks playing there this year isn't going to help us either. But pick that apart.
Yep.
Where are we at?
Okay, we're at with the start of the stadium. You know, we've got a 4-year. Once the stadium's complete in mid 2022, we'll have 4 years left to run on our existing venue hire agreement.
Yep.
So there is no conjecture about whether we'll be returning to Moore Park. We will be.
Okay.
That said, you know, we, like any organisation, when you come to the end of a certain tenure, you will assess all the things that contribute to making the right decision around where we spend our future. And look, we're going through, as much as we're enjoying the Cogger experience, we've got a lot of members that find it hard to get there. That's the reality of it. We've got members living up in the Northern Beaches or the northwest
of Sydney.
Yeah, northwest Sydney, exactly where we are today. Yep. That it's not easy. You know, I live on the Northern Beaches. It takes me over an hour to get there in a car, and I get a luxury of having to park out the front.
Yeah. Right?
So, you know, so I don't complain to How too many you. People. I know, sorry about that. But if there's one perk, that's it. No, but look, in reality, we're a club for all of Sydney, and unfortunately, Cogger is probably a little bit too far south. You know, and the inner
But for
west,
others, it's perfect, right?
Yeah, and it's great. And we've seen our attendance from the south grow. We've seen the community engage really well with us down there, and we love it. And it's been a fantastic experience. The Leichhardt's throws up different challenges. But again, when you're in there and you're close to the action and it's full, it's got a great vibe about it as well. And, you know, it's coincided with us winning a lot, which also helps. So, but look, you know, we need a world-class stadium for this football club that we're going to stay in for 30 years. And they're building us one.
And Phil, like you said.
And Phil. And, you know, I don't buy into the notion that we can't do that. You know, I think it's going to be hard. We've got to do a lot of work in the community to engage.
Yeah.
But, you know, if there's one club that's going to be able to do that into the future, it's us, in any code.
Does the state government have a builder signed on yet?
Yeah, they have.
They do.
Okay. Yeah, so that's all moving along fine. I think what you read in the papers is a lot of paper talk. You
Journalistic
know, I think, yeah,
but creativity.
Yeah, looking for things to write about, which is fine. Yeah. You know, that's what the job is. But I think for us, we kept in the loop regularly by both the Trust and Infrastructure New South Wales and the Office of Sport. You know, those
so
guys.
We're sticking to the timeline.
Yeah, the timeline is definitely mid-2022. Okay. So, you know, we'll have two more seasons out after this, which was a bit longer than we initially thought, but that was, you know, the election and a bunch of things came up that delayed that a little bit. But yeah, for me, the one point that I do need to drive home is the ability to operate in two modes, and I've spoken about that publicly before, and I know we're all consistent with that across across the other tenants of the stadium. But look, it's not our money. No. You know, at the end of the day, we've got to work with the government and the trust to build a solution that's going to work, and part of the onus is on us to
in a fantasy land where the Waratahs, Sydney FC, Sydney Roosters. Mm-hmm. Have I missed anyone? I think that might be it. Main tenants.
That's it.
Get around a campfire.
Get around a campfire. You know, Uncle Nick comes along, and Mr. Traktovenko. Mm-hmm. He says, "You know what? We'll pay for the bloody curtain." Does that ever happen, do you reckon?
Well, if I was them, I'd be saying, "Well, how am I going to get a return?" Right. So. Rest assured, both those guys have put in a lot of money to their respective clubs, and at one point, at some point in the future, we'll want to see some return. And
straw.
Yeah, and so I think, look, yes, but there's other ways of doing it. There's commercial ways of doing it, and branding a curtain. Like there's so many different things that can be done. And I suppose to my point earlier is that we've got to be part of that process and sit down with both the government and the trust and say, hey, what are we going to do to get this done?
Surely, it's Winston with a Y. Don't you? They can
That's
just
it.
Big curtain.
That's it. The pink curtain. Oh,
that is one of your
not
words.
Not sponsored.
Not sponsored.
No sponsor this pod.
Winston.
All right. Terrible. Brilliant. No, thank you. Thank
that's
you.
A dad, that's like a dad it. Joke and thank
I like it. No, I like it.
All right. The next.
Wow. Let me just write that down.
The next bit of infrastructure question. Mm. And I think there was an article fairly recently about this. Centre of Excellence.
Yeah.
Where exactly, if you're allowed to share this, where exactly are we at? Have we put an expression of interest in to Tempe, to the council, Georges River Council, is it? Or
no, Inner West Council. Yeah.
Have we like put a development proposal? Where exactly is that at?
Yeah, so we've basically got three options that we've been exploring. We've explored a lot more than three, by the way, but we've sort of landed and shortlisted three. One is to stay in Moore Park and be built into the new facility. Challenges with that are obviously the training fields and the public access to those fields across the road becomes a little bit challenging when you're looking at high performance.
Damn public.
Yeah, dog walkers. But so that's there's some downsides there. Obviously, Tempe's a great plot of land. It's central, right near the M5 there. So there's access.
Airport.
So, but it's a challenging piece of land that needs a fair bit of work. But again, we're working with the mayor and some of his staff on options there, and it's definitely one that we could do. But probably the obvious one is Macquarie, and that's where we're probably closest, to be honest.
There's a lot of, and for those that have been out to watch the boys or girls train there, there is a lot of space at Macquarie.
Yeah,
a lot of fields.
Yeah, the winter field that we have there, that where we've trained for the last 8 years, is a perfect training facility, and having that in situ is a big leg up already.
Yeah, right? And you've got a building. We've got a couple of buildings there, don't we?
We have one.
Yeah.
One main one, that's a glorified toilet block.
Yeah.
At the end of the day,
yeah, you know, it looks a bit aged.
Yeah, and that's funny. You know, we had a consultant work with us on our Centre of Excellence planning, and he did a tour of the facility, and he sort of walked around, looked at it, and saw all the sky blue and the pictures of the trophies and all that sort of stuff, and got to the end of it. And I said, "So, what do you think?" And he said, "I don't know how you've won anything playing over there." But the reality is suddenly it's not necessarily always about the facility. Yeah. It's about what goes on in the facility that matters. And
quite the castle. It's not a house. It's a home.
Correct. But you know, at the end of the day, what if you had both?
Yeah.
What if you had the home, but it was a nice home? And I think that's what we need. And we've existed well at Macquarie. And I think the future of our club needs to be in a facility that's world class. And we've got to build that at one of those three places. We are probably closest to Macquarie in the context of where we are down through the process. Yeah. But again, you're not the decision maker in this.
Yeah.
It's a third party.
Does that involve Macquarie University at all and any kind of?
Yeah, absolutely. The university are the owners of the land. And the owners of the land in the sense that New South Wales government gave them the land many years ago to be used for sporting and recreation means. So, yeah, the facilities guys at Macquarie Uni need to assess what they want to do with that land. And we've been through an EOI process with them that just concluded, and we're hoping to hear in the not-too-distant future the outcome of
that. So we're talking probably an update from the club within 12 months rather than...
No, it'd be much sooner.
Much sooner. Oh, great.
We want to be in a position to actually make an announcement on something by the end of this quarter.
Brilliant.
We'll give you a buzz.
Yeah.
I'll come on and talk about
exclusive.
It. Exclusive. No, we're not that far away.
To mention a Twitter question from one of our many fans, ever growing.
listeners.
Am I assuming, am I getting ahead to myself? They're listeners, baby steps. At Chucky 118. And we've had similar questions and thoughts, and it's been already briefly mentioned, but listening to Simon Hill and other commentators around the game, maybe it's Western United to blame, but the attendance this season is down. Mm-hmm. So what can Sydney SC do in terms of sustaining and, if not more so, growing membership in days and weeks and months and years to come?
Yeah, look, our attendance is actually up because you've got to take the derby. We've had a derby by now. Which obviously last year was the SCG early in the year, which had 30-odd thousand there. So those big spikes change your averages quite significantly. So, you know, we're not playing at a venue where we can get any more than 19,000 in there, 18,000 in there. So that's always going to be a challenge.
Be interesting, the derby, the first one at Cogra this week.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
I feel like we've been at Cogra for quite a little while now. Mm. And I just thought to myself walking out of the game last Friday that... Yeah, we haven't had a derby here yet, so it'll be interesting to see what Cogra will be like come, you know, this time or Saturday this week.
Yeah, it'll be rocking. It's going to be fun, and I think, you know, it's got its challenges. Don't get me wrong. You know, getting both sets of fans in and out safely and ensuring that, you know,
segregation.
Yeah, the focus is on football. Yeah, but look, we've done a lot of work behind the scenes with security and the police to ensure that the safety of our patrons and we're confident it's going to be a really great night for football.
In terms of memberships, we've mentioned, you know, engaging with the associations.
Yep.
Tick. Maybe you're moving away from traditional means of getting eyes onto Sydney FC, so more social media, I've noticed, in terms of marketing and, you know, that way. Anything else in terms of memberships?
Look, memberships are up. You know, we've got more members now than we've ever had at the club, and it's been a fairly consistent trend the last couple of years, and that's largely been driven by our community engagement and being able to offer memberships that suit people. You know, the hard part about being displaced is that we've got members from all over Sydney, and some of them, like I said before, can't make it to 10, 11, 12 home games. You know, they might be able to make it to 2 or 3. So being able to offer them something that delivers value for money and keeps them engaged in the club until such time as they can go back to coming to every single home game, then we've been focused on ensuring we keep that continuity of members and grow numbers, less about the yield of those memberships, and that's what we need to get back when we get in the new stadium.
And connection through schools, like you've got, you know, your sports highs like Endeavour.
Yep.
And recently, like Matraville as well, coming on board as Sydney FC. Does that help kind of with memberships as well?
It's all about presence, right? Yeah. You've got to be visible in the community. You've got to be out there. People are going to know what you're doing and be talking to people. And, you know, we've got seven academy schools. We've got
engagement officers specifically?
Yeah, they're in seven associations. So they work 4 days a week in the association offices and one day in our office. We pay their wages. And it's all about, again, you know, you can't ask people who are understaffed to go do your job for you. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's our responsibility to connect with the football community. And in the past, I think we've sort of taken it for granted that people are going to want to support us. We've got to go out there and earn their support. And I think we're doing that on the field with the performances, but we've got to match that off the field with
hard work. Fantastic that we're not resting on our laurels and pushing forward and looking for progression. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Signs of a successful club.
So we've moved away, or we're slowly moving away from a FFA-controlled league.
Yep.
What are the advantages, the pitfalls you see of that, and what's your take and what you'd like to see?
I suppose it's a little bit more freedom, and largely commercial freedom. You know, the FFA are a regulator of the game. They're the governing body. You know, they're at odds with themselves sometimes when they run a league, own a league, and have to regulate that league. You know, it's a hard dynamic to try and comprehend. And I think we've suffered a little bit from that. you know, I don't like the FFA bashing that goes on. It's you know, they've got a difficult job, and I think under the circumstances, you know, football's in a much better place now than it was when I was playing.
Yep.
Right. So, you know, I think as much as we could be further down that continuum, we are where we are, and I think it's we've got a good foundation to sort of launch the next stage of our development. You know, we're as a bunch of private enterprises, we're able to really invest and grow the league. Without the shackles of having to regulate it. Okay, so from a commercial standpoint, we can take some risks. If we make a mistake, then it's a commercial mistake. It's not a regulatory one or what have you. So, you know, a reputational one that might tarnish the FFA in a FIFA or AFC situation. So, you know, I think we've got a lot more freedom. We've got the ability to bring in people who are all singing from the same song sheet. You know, in a way, sometimes we're almost at counter odds again with some of the FFA's needs, and they were holding us back in some respects with relation to our needs. Now, I think, you know, I said it the other night, you know, the ability that for us to divorce has helped our relationship, because we've sort of worked out that you guys are responsible for that. We're now responsible for that. Now let's focus on ensuring that the game's in good hands and that we're making the right decision for the game when we're making decisions. And, you know, the collaboration with James Johnson's already been great in the little time he's been in the chair. He's got a lot to do, but, you know, we're going to help him. You know, the key is that we're not going to sort of watch him over there. We're going to bring him in close, and we're going to work with him, and I'm sure he'll reciprocate, because that's what he's done so far.
The clubs are paying a bit of child support too for the next couple of years, aren't they?
Yeah, we are, and that's, you know, that's my analogy is that once you divorce, you separate your assets, you then look after a kid, you become a better parent.
That's it.
And I think that's where we're at right now, is that we are looking at the game as a whole, because we both want the same thing out of it. A healthier game is better for the A-League, W-League, Y-League, and it's better for the national teams, and it's better for the grassroots. So, you know, we coexist in the one environment, and we need that environment to be as healthy as we can be, and we'll only get the most out of it if we work together.
You mentioned as well working with James Johnson. There was a bit of talk in the media around Richard Scudamore coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get a chance to meet him?
Yeah.
What are you expecting to come from, I guess, that kind of process of having him in and looking at the league? Can you reveal anything?
There's no silver bullet here. It's not like we expected Richard Scudamore to fly into Sydney and solve all the problems of the world. You know, that's
$1 million TV
right. We sent him packing. He was hopeless. Richard was fantastic. You know, just for me as a sort of business person to be able to spend time with someone that has been so successful in his role over so many years. You know, he's a very humble, unassuming guy for what he's achieved. And I think there were only a few things that he said to me that I sort of put in my memory bank and went, yeah, that's important. That's stuff that we'll need to build on. And I think we're all realistic and pragmatic about what he's there to do. He's there to provide guidance. I know Greg O'Rourke is in regular contact with him, which is great for Greg, you know, to have that support. And I believe he's extremely open around how he supports Greg. And, you know, he's coming out to speak at our business, Sydney FC Business Lunch, which will be interesting. So he'll be, I think that's later in February, 28th of Feb. So, there's some real benefit from having him involved. It's not like he's sitting out in a desk waiting to be called into use, but he's definitely there for us as a resource if and when we need advice.
What a great relationship to have too.
Yeah, brilliant. And again, good to hear that, like yourself, Danny, again, successful businessman in your own right, and I know you're a humble man, but for you to be learning stuff off someone like Richard Scudamore again, and I'm sure that there are other club CEOs that had similar takeaways to you.
Yeah, of course. You know, you're always learning, right? Yeah. If you think you know everything.
Yeah, you're in the wrong room.
You're
right?
My wife.
Yeah. She listens, right?
Yeah, she's a big fan.
Yeah, good.
Hey, we have fans.
Didn't you say we could
one? Listener.
One listener.
Yeah, brilliant. We've spoken, we've mainly talked about A-League, to be honest. We'll get into some W-League stuff a bit more, but from just to wrap up our section on the club and back of house and things like that, Sydney FC, from the outside anyway, I feel like we're fairly well resourced back of house. You know, we've got these engagement offices that we spoke about. Do you feel the same? Do you want more? I mean, you always want more, but
I think you can go back to sustainability, right? The more I have, the more I've got to make to pay for them. And I think there's a balance. And like any business, you would we love to have another 10 hands on deck doing things? Yes, absolutely. Will they pay back? Probably not, which is why they're not here. Mm. But look, we're a very well-resourced club. You know, when you look around the league, you know, we're very fortunate that our ownership and our structure has allowed us to hire the people that we've got, the caliber of people we've got in the organisation to deliver on the project. And I think, you know, I wouldn't say we're under-resourced.
Yeah, and you've still got people that do dual roles as well, like Peter Vernikos, I think it was.
Yeah, Pete does a few different things.
So three different things. And again, thanks to Pete, if he's listening, for helping us get the girls on last week.
Yeah, like that's also a development opportunity, right? I see, you know, if in club world, it's great to be able to get experience doing different things. Mm. If you're stuck doing the same thing every day, then that, particularly in a club, that can get a bit tiresome. So being able to provide other opportunities for young people to develop in the administrative side of the game is a is something that's a good thing.
So Danny, just to change tack a little bit and get a little bit more personal, when you're not a CEO and you're not there at the offices, like what do you do for fun? Like, what are your hobbies, interests? How do you rest? What do you do in your downtime?
Oh, look, I've got two girls who are 13 and 11 who both play football. So I go and do what other dads do on the weekend and stand on the sideline.
Melrose Terry Hills Raiders?
No, that was where I was when I was a boy. But no, they both
carry the legacy.
No, they both play down at Manly United where I played actually through. So
in the SAP program?
One's in the SAP program, one's in the under 15s. Girls Youth League, whatever it is, MPL. Okay. So I was my daughter's under 13 SAP coach last year. Wow. So I coached the young girls there, which was
hang on.
Yeah.
You coached Manly United's SAP team.
Yes.
13s last year.
Yes.
I have sorry to take the pot off.
Fanboy.
No, I coached Sydney Uni's 13 SAP team last year. That was you in the chinos in the at Cromer Park.
Yeah, we gave you a touch up.
No, we won that game. We beat you in the 13s. Danny, hang on. No. All our listeners. No, this is really weird.
Now you're starting to sound like Marcus Babbel.
No, we beat you.
Oh, I don't know.
I can't remember.
You had.
I can't remember what it did last week.
That really tall centre mid, or she forward. She was like. Twice.
We have got a few tall girls,
twice anyone's height, you know, adult-wise, but...
Yeah, admit defeat, Sean.
We beat them. 100%.
Yeah, probably did.
Yeah. So that was you. How weird was that?
Yeah, okay. So I do that.
But,
you know, I also love surfing, and I take my girls surfing, which is an enjoyable part of the week when it's still warm weather, but... just hanging out, just relaxing, and as I said, spending as much time as I can with the family.
Does having two girls give any motivation for perhaps a W League academy?
It's funny, you know. You're probably a little bit more aware to that sort of stuff when you've got two girls and a wife and a female dog. So in the house. I do think it does make you a little bit aware. It doesn't make it right or wrong or any more right. It's just you're probably a little bit more aware of those type
emotion
of
attached.
Yeah, and the inequalities and those things that you see from time to time that definitely still exist.
And before you came on board as CEO, you know, the league had been going for a dozen years. Mm-hmm. What's your first kind of memory or interaction or moment of seeing Sydney FC? You know, was it attending a game, watching it on telly?
Like, it was more because I was overseas. It was always on telly, so I used to watch it as often as I could overseas when I knew games were on. As I said before, really hard to follow from. You know, just time zone wise on the other side of the planet. But I was always reading Australian newspapers online, like SMH or whatever it might have been, and catching up with Sydney, being a Sydney boy. And, you know, when the A League started, having recently retired from
So you probably had some mates playing in the
100%. I played with Wilco, and it's funny, there's a lot of those guys. Broski played against Broski back in the old NSL.
Oh,
and
wow.
A lot of those NSL guys are still running around.
Carved him up.
Broski?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you know. Yeah. No, look, I think Broski was about 12 years old, but just being around the sport and seeing a lot of those guys transition into the early A-League and the early success it had, you know, some of the Sydney FC crowds in the early days.
Did you have your
fantastic.
Own favourite player in those years watching it from overseas? Flick on.
No, I wouldn't say there was one that stood out. Yeah. No. Okay. Sorry.
Nice. So we're in a unique position. We've re-signed, 20 of 23? 20,
yep.
Is that a quiet off season?
Well,
or are we anticipating losing some to Asia?
Well, you never know, right? When your players are playing well, they're always in demand. So that's one thing we've learnt over the last couple of years, that the phone's always ringing. But look, I think to answer the first question, I may be able to go away and not have the phone ring. I remember last year I made the mistake of going away in June with my family, and I think we signed 6 players that week. Wow. So I spent pretty much most of my time on the phone to either Steve or to Terry McFlynn at that time, or or to Paul Reed, or to 8 player agents. But look, it was worth it. It was a week's worth of good work, I think.
Definitely. Speaking of player agents, Danny, we alluded to earlier that we've lost a couple of players recently, both in the A-League and W-League. Obviously, Branners being the big one from the A-League, and Chloe and Caitlin from the W-League team. Yep. Ryan Teague, one of the promising youngsters. How does that work? Do players generally give you a heads up, or is it really all professionally done through agents and that's the first contact you get?
Well, technically, the first contact has to be from a club.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, they're breaching regulations. Well, but look, in reality, if you take the Brandon situation, it was very clear to us that Brandon saw his long-term future overseas.
Yeah.
He'd earned that right by playing consistently at a high
level. Surprising it took so long.
And I think for him, he probably thought he would go at the end of the last season and there'd be a club. And we know there were some clubs interested, but none of them really were prepared to pay the money that he was worth. And Brandon, being Brandon, signed a multi-year deal with us, so we would get a transfer fee. Some other players don't do that. They'll find themselves at the end of their contract and they'll take the risk of not signing and going for free. But, Brandon felt a debt of gratitude to the club because we took him from Perth and sort of put him on the map. But I'd argue he put himself on the map through great performances. But, he's the sort of guy that said, let's work out a plan. And we did that. And look, we didn't want him to go in January. That's the hard one. Mm. The problem is you just never know when the phone's going to ring
again.
And if you say no and you get...
Plus being injured at the time as well. Pohang again, bit of trust there.
That was the irony of it all, right? Yeah. He was talking to Branners about it. He's like, he's been playing at the top of his game for 5 years. And the one minute he's injured, the phone rings and he gets a deal. So, one thing's for certain in football, players are going to come and go. There's players that you want to keep and you want to keep for as long as you can keep them, and Brandon was one of those players. But equally, they've all got ambition. Good players, winners, have got ambition, and sometimes you've got to let them go to bring them back.
Listening to you on the Fox Football podcast the other week, there was a bit of a back and forth around marquee players and big names and Del Piero and whatnot. We're kind of split on this, the three of us, right? Do you see, and this is kind of off the top of the head, right, so it might not be the most well-formed thought or question.
You got so far.
Yeah, I just remembered I wanted to ask it and I didn't write it down. Do you see a future for big names like the Del Pieros where you still see Del Piero jerseys today, right?
Yeah,
so
sure.
where they get crowds in through the door. There's a lot of media with the possibility of Zlatan coming to Perth.
Yep.
Do you see that? Obviously not judging recently our recruitment, but that isn't obviously our recruitment strategy. Is that something you see as could be beneficial to the league in general?
Look, there's no doubt big names draw broader attraction to the game, and that's not a bad thing. I think the reality of it these days is that it's becoming increasingly harder.
Yep.
You've got to have a bit of luck. You've got to have a player who is potentially putting lifestyle ahead of and family ahead of finances, because the reality is, particularly with the tax rate down here and the strength of our currency is now another thing playing against us, is that the two things that kill a deal, a net euro, those two words in any deal that you're trying to bring, as soon as the agent says
the bottom line
net euro, you're in trouble. So I think, look, we would never rule it out. We're not the sort of club that would ever say no to the possibility of bringing someone like that. I think we've proven that in the past. Mm. But at the same time, I think we're being pragmatic around ensuring that we get performances on the field that will drive long-term sustainable interest in the game. And, you know, notwithstanding Del Piero's impact at the time, it was fantastic. But, you know, the year after he left, the crowds went back down. Mm. So
yeah, right. Yeah. It wasn't sticky.
No, but it was a nice injection that the club got, and I think it did help. But whether that sort of thing is the key to long-term sustainability, yeah, I'm not sure it is.
There's something else discussed in that same chat, James. Tony Pignata was talking about, you know, Nicky Carl getting sold.
Yeah.
And then 3 days later, Alessandro coming.
Yeah.
Alfie's our Alessandro in this situation because we were an hour, you know, off signing Fernando Torres.
Yeah.
And then a couple of weeks later, we get Adam Lafondra and look what he's done for the club.
Yeah.
And look, again, you go back to the recruitment process with someone like Adam. We had so many character references from people who'd played with him that just vouched for his personality, his work ethic, you know, his ability. So we felt there was very low risk with someone like Adam. You know, you never know. But, you know, he hit the ground running when he came and scored early on in the preseason and just kept scoring and hasn't stopped.
One of the questions that's come up a bit, he was announced on a 3-year deal.
Yep.
Is he locked in for next year or is there still some stuff to work out?
No, he's locked in.
Locked in. Okay, yeah, I've seen that question come up.
He's a contracted player. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, look, all players are never locked in, right?
Yeah, of course, but he's contracted for next year.
Yeah, he is. He's contracted. We have 20 contracted players.
There'll be a lot of happy people.
The three that aren't contracted are Brandon because he's gone.
Yep.
And Ryan Teague because he's gone and Marco Tilio's on a scholarship contract. So. Yep.
Brilliant.
Time for some quick fire questions, Danny.
Yeah.
You're in the hot seat. All we require is a yes or no answer. Oh, so no fence sitting.
No Sean's.
Jonathan.
Sorry.
Yes, that is true.
So no maybes.
No maybes.
Wow. Right.
I'll be gentle.
Say that off air.
No. Yes or no, salary cap.
Yes.
Now I really want him to expand.
That's it.
For now.
Ooh. Yeah, okay.
All right. Promotion, relegation for Australia. For the A-League.
Yes, one day.
Oof. Yep, okay.
Good. I know I'm not allowed to say other words. I'm cheating badly here. But
That's okay. You're a supporter of promotion, relegation
Look,
for Australia.
In a perfect environment, we know how great it is overseas. Yeah, now, whether exciting. The game can sustain it is the question. And when the game can sustain it is hard to predict, but
soccer Twitter's going nuts.
When the
in a perfect world, like who doesn't want to see teams fighting for survival? So yeah, that's more than one word.
You're a guest; we'll allow it.
fan,
Senior C Female Academy, sometime within the next 5 years.
Yes,
fantastic, good. And Sydney will one day have their own purpose-built stadium.
While we're alive.
In our lifetime.
One day's a long time. No.
No.
Okay.
And just, we ask this of a lot of people, we ask this of ourselves. So that's over. Thank you, Danny, for the quick fire. Yes and no's, you've done very well.
Thank you.
And we've asked this of a lot of our guests and of each other. What's your favourite Sky Blue moment?
Yeah, look. There's
during your tenure or before that, any time? Just
obviously the ones during my tenure ones that had bigger impact on me. So my favourite, it's probably two, if I could say two.
Yeah, I'll allow that's it. Right.
You'll allow it? Sean will allow it.
Obviously winning the championship last year in Perth was pretty amazing. The sad thing was it was in Perth. So we couldn't
nice probably, stadium.
Yeah, it was great, but you couldn't really enjoy it with as many people, particularly a lot of our staff who were back in Sydney and they were having more fun,
at the
Star. Yeah, they were having a great time at the Star and we were at the ground. But so that was great. And I'd say the other night against Melbourne City. You know,
that was awesome.
That one and the Melbourne victory 6-1.
Having 10 men.
Yeah, just heart and just demonstrated so much about the resilience of that group, the people.
And the fact we did it in front of our biggest crowd.
Big crowd. Just a fun night, right?
I wasn't there.
Yeah, there you go.
I was overseas. Sorry.
No, it wasn't that good, Dan. It wasn't that good. No, but those, sometimes it's the games, and that game meant a fair bit, right? It was
First versus second.
Yeah. You know, there was points in that game where I felt it was beyond us. And the character that they showed, the support they got, the crowd never gave up. And after half time, once we sort of got level, I had a sneaky suspicion we were going to win that game.
You wouldn't know that we had 10 men.
No, you wouldn't.
Three quarters. No.
Three quarters of the game.
Yeah.
Do you get to most games?
Every game.
Awesome.
It's in his job description.
Yeah, it's KPI.
Very nice. We'll just end up on some fan questions. So the first one's from Bertie. Bertie says, do you see any international marquee friendlies in the next few pre-seasons? Or do these things tend to be more opportunistic? Bertie, as a Spurs fan, is keen to see Spurs again, as am I. Thank you, Bertie. Keep listening. We love you.
Well, Bertie, look, yes is the answer. I suppose the challenge with those things are sometimes they are a little bit opportunistic, which I'm trying to remove from the plan and start to be a bit more structured in about how we go about sourcing teams to play against and working with government and other stakeholders. Because the reality is you need to have support from the government, you need support from the stadium.
It
depends. If you take risk on them, you take risk, which could be the opposite of a cash cow is what, I don't know.
Yeah.
but if it looks, historically we've been paid to play. Yep. So there's zero risk. We went to PSG in China. Mm. We got paid to play. So
I'm not playing China anytime soon.
Yeah, no, we're not heading there anytime soon. But, yeah, so the answer is yes, we like them. They're important for our brand. They're important to give our players the opportunity to play against household names, and I think that's great for our fans as well.
Okay. Dylan Seven asks, excluding Brandon O'Neill, Branners, and Alex Brosk as obvious choices. If you could bring back one Sydney FC player to the club, who would it be?
I would say Bobo.
Ah, good choice.
Couple of reasons.
Yeah.
He scored 1,000 goals. but he was just a good guy. Like, he was just a really quiet, good person to have at the club. And I think, you know, when he came in, you know, I think Arnie really got the most out of him.
Fits in with the culture.
Yeah, he did. And it's often hard with South Americans. They're culturally very different. And he just fit in like a glove, good person, good family, really reflected the values of the club and had success, like had a huge amount of success here. So, you know, it was disappointing when he left.
So he's doing pretty well in India. I think he scored a couple of goals.
He got injured. He did score a couple of goals.
Was unpaid in Turkey or something?
Yeah, it was tough for him, right? Because he left knowing that he had a couple more years to earn as much as he could.
And signed a contract with us too.
Yeah, exactly. And the Turkey money was really, really attractive. And you know, obviously we got paid a transfer fee, which, you know, we were happy with. But at the same time, we would have been happier if he stayed. But the reality is things happen in football and I think if he had his time over, he probably wouldn't have gone. But, you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing.
Maestro Milos asks, why didn't we sign an Asian player this year? Did we even try? Kevin also has requested that we sign a Thai player. but in serious, Kevin actually asked on the back of that as well, has the club looked at forming any closer relationships with clubs in kind of East, Southeast Asia? We had a sister agreement once upon a time. Kind of, is that something, speaking of expansion and fans and whatnot?
Yeah, look, I think naturally because we're playing in Asia so regularly because of our performances domestically, I think that's something we are looking at. We sent Patrick Flottman up to Thailand because we couldn't accommodate him in our A-League squad, knowing that he was good enough to play A-League football. And he went up there and had a year playing full-time professional at Air Force and came back straight into our A-League team. So we are cognizant of it. So that's that part of the question. The first part, which related to or do we even try to find Asian players? I think there's a big misnomer there around Asian players in that, you know, Asian players are actually really well paid in their local country. And I think there's this perception that they're all getting paid nothing.
Most of those Asian countries, you know, that perception of they're developing. So if they're a developing country, yeah, they must get developing kind of money.
But their football economies are actually quite robust, and they're getting very good money. So the best players are getting paid very, very, very well in their home country.
Well, look at the IPL and the megabucks there, right?
Yeah. Why is Roy Krishna in India?
Yeah.
Right? Because he's getting paid a lot of money. So India is probably a bit of an outlier because of the way it's structured. But, you know, good Thai players earn good money in Thailand. Good Vietnamese players earn good money in Vietnam. And obviously Korea, Japan, China, you know they've got bigger football
West
markets
Asia.
Than us.
West Asia. Not even talking about West Asia.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is that what we're left with, players that we can afford to bring in, aren't any better than the guys we have. So our philosophy is if we're going to change our squad, we're going to improve it. We're going to bring in players that can do a better job than the guys that are there today. And the ones that we can afford to bring in aren't going
to
do that.
They'd have to be marquees by the sounds of it.
Well, even then it comes down to your budget.
Yeah.
Right? Our view was that we wanted to make sure we could bring in as many players that would be competitive in both competitions. Mm. Right?
Reza.
I think we're going – yeah. So Reza was – but it was also a little bit fortuitous in that he was in Cyprus and they were paying a lot of his wage. So – It was a way in which we could bring him in, and that's not to say we're not looking at it, but it's got to be right. And I think just by simply saying that there's a huge amount of Asian talent out there that we're not bringing in, is not understanding the economic implications of what's going on in those countries.
Just on the back of that as well, how can we translate our domestic success to ACL?
Look, I think if you look at last year and the way we played, you know, we were extremely unlucky. Last campaign, you know, I think we deserve to come out of that group the way we played. And, you know, going 5-5 on aggregate with Shanghai SIPG over two legs is pretty phenomenal for a club that had a budget of about a 20th or 30th of theirs. So, you know, we are punching well above our weight in terms of the financial restrictions we have. But at the same time, we've got enough talent. You look at the quality of our players, you know, they've got the ability to mix it up there. And I think that's the difference, that, you know, we've just got to translate good performances into 3 points. And we didn't do that last year and we paid the price. Yep. I think this year we've got to win our home games and then you've got to sneak a couple of results away and you're through.
Okay. Tony Popovsky asks...
Troy Popovsky.
Oh, excuse me, Troy, which... You can join the club with Joe, of me saying that. Troy Popovsky asks, which I, like I said, I think you've already answered, but curious to see. If we thought Brendan O'Neill was a main member of the squad, why haven't we replaced him? Why have we backfilled it, for want of a better term?
Because the people that were backfilling are capable of playing week in, week out. And look, I had this conversation with Steve. I said, look, we've got to make a decision on Brandon. Is Paolo Retre a starting number six at Sydney FC for the future? And Steve was unequivocal, yes. Mm. So, and he'd played six games in a row in Brandon's position and we'd won them all.
Yep.
So, you know, in a way, at some point, you've got to back the assembly line of players. And Paolo was patient. He'd played, he'd very rarely, if ever, let us down in the time he'd come on. I remember when he came on in Shanghai. He came on late in the game up there and did a fantastic job. And he's played virtually every position except goalkeeper at this football club. Yeah. And he deserved the right to play there. We also have Caceres, who we talked about off air, is probably, you know, just an unbelievable talent, could play, you know, at 6 or 10 or 8 in any other team in the competition. He'd walk into their starting lineup, and he's there as well. He can play six. So we've got depth, and we've got young guys coming through. Callum Neuenhoff, who played in the National Youth League the other night. He's training full-time with the A-League guys. He's a fantastic young prospect.
Jake Holman's my favourite.
Jake's obviously a bit further forward, and you know, he's another talent. Like, we've got guys coming through, and at some point you've got to back them. And we're a club, and particularly Steve as a head coach, he's proven he'll back young guys.
Awesome. And our favourite question as a group comes from Phil Moran, who asks, how much we're paying...
Is that Moron?
Hello, Moran.
Sorry, Phil, I'm just joking.
How much are we paying for the conspiracy to continue?
Oh, it's so expensive. That's why we haven't signed any Asian players, because the fees of the conspiracy
while
fees are so high.
The backdated payments.
Yeah, I just find some of that stuff hilarious. Like, if I'm so glad it's not our club. You know, I'm so glad that our fans aren't that sort of
gullible. I don't know,
just yeah, I just don't get that sort of mentality. It's
success breeds jealousy, Danny.
Yeah, I get that, but I'd also think there should be a degree of logic to someone's argument. There is zero logic in that argument, and it, to me, I'm flabbergasted when I read some of that stuff.
I think we get dispensations as well, like the salary cap, like with the conspiracy.
We made the salary cap rules.
Yes, yes, that, that's so what I thought.
We're very lucky. Oh,
exclusive.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's the joys.
Fantastic.
Danny, mate, you've been very, very generous with your time. We've absolutely loved having you here. Any last questions, boys, before we let Danny go?
Actually had one, which is off the cuff. Yeah. We got this as a joke question, but I wanted to do it just because it's been such a good sport. Joe Zed asks, can you say his last name? Because I keep cocking it up.
We're just showing Danny a piece of paper.
That's Zalonardo.
Oh, wow.
Brilliant.
Close?
That's pretty close.
I've been say it real fast.
Is that Lucy Zelich? Really? Yeah. I can't.
Joe Zalonardo.
Nice. Oh, I think he's nailed it.
I think I've screwed it up three times in the first go.
He's a lot better than you, James.
Yeah, sorry. He is. Joe, that's Danny Townsend saying your name, mate.
Yeah, Joe, just message me on Twitter and tell me if I got it right or not.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mate, thank you so much for your time. Thanks, we really appreciate it. And hopefully one day in the future we might even get you back.
To come on. So you guys are doing a great thing for our fan base to be able to listen to this stuff. This will be a very low rating podcast, but the others have been very good.
Highly doubt that.
So, no, thank you very much for having me on and all that you do.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Frank. Thank you very much.